This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Just like Mateus Nunes, Man City pulled their finger out and got the job done in the end. A match pretty much nobody will remember, but one that is significant nonetheless. It's Thursday, the 7th of March. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Joe Ritchie.
I'm Alex Michelle.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, you lovely people. On the back of a Champions League knockout victory for Manchester City, we'll be talking about that Copenhagen win and also turning attention, Sam McClaxon, because we are officially turning attention to the weekend's match against Liverpool. What a feisty one that promises to be. But there is some football to speak about in the meantime, Alex. It probably won't go down as the most memorable game of the season. Good luck to anyone. I'm pretty sure there'll be some obscure pub quiz questions about this game in 5 years' time, but I guess there's still a couple of talking points. And look, I said on the way home, I've been to more exciting 0-0 draws, but four goals in a Champions League knockout game, you know, there's still plenty to chat about.
Yeah, with the first two goals, it's sort of like the negative variance that we felt all season in terms of not being able to find the back of the net when we have so many shots just sort of all bubbled up at once. And then from that point onwards, I mean, they're beautifully worked goal, you have to say that. But aside from that, it was just easy cruising from there. And I mean, I don't think you can ask for much more from a club perspective, from a fan perspective, maybe. But easy work there, and I think that's all you can really
ask
for.
It's the dictionary definition of get the job exactly, done, basically. Yeah. And look, I've secretly at times gone into these kind of Champions League matches, even in the group stage, and gone, it would be not quite nice if we went 1-0 down just for a bit of entertainment. But Joe, I reckon given the two fixtures this one was sandwiched between, it was a case of, well, I could probably make the argument that the contest went on too long in terms of Guardiola's wishes. I reckon he'd have been quite happy with that 3-0 at half time. Obviously, Copenhagen scoring, it just about keeps the door open, but it was a case, really, wasn't it? Get the job done as early as possible and take plays off. Although, I guess, Haaland 88 minutes, John Stones coming on. Thankfully, Rodri got that rest, of course. But yeah, enough minutes in those legs, I reckon, just to keep things fresh enough.
Yeah, I thought it was the perfect mix of rotation to start, getting players on, getting players off that started. And obviously, you know, like you said, there's a pretty big match coming up on Sunday. And I think it's a balance, right? A fine balance of getting important minutes in players like, you know, Haaland, right? Some people were saying, why is he playing? Well, he also missed, 6 weeks? Yeah. I mean, he's still going to get up to match fitness.
He's one of the least used players in the entire squad.
Right. And then, I mean, to me, and obviously hindsight's 2020, I think this lineup kind of made perfect sense when you look at it. You know, Alvarez had been out of the side, and I think since he's come back the past couple games, he's been brilliant. A lot of key pieces like Oscar Bob, Matias Nunez, Rico Lewis that can play a role in this type of game anyways. You probably wouldn't normally play them all together if there was a little bit more riding on the game. But I think the lineup was the perfect blend of getting minutes. You know, Avardiol, right, coming back in the side, he needs minutes. I think the only kind of question mark was Rodri, right? Like, I think we all collectively could probably say we would have rather have not seen him play, but 45 minutes.
Was
no
Guardiola
arm, no
getting him up to 60 games unbeaten so it wasn't ruined on Sunday?
You know what? He is smarter than we are. He is.
Speak for yourself, Mr. Ricci. Look, it was one of those games. And I was just looking at the fixture list, Alex. Do you reckon that's the last? Obviously, it wasn't a dead rubber. There was still plenty riding on it. But probably the last rotational fixture that we'll see until possibly one of those league games in between a Champions League quarterfinal. Probably not going to see much at Palace away. Luton at home might be the next one we really get to see rotation, because I'm expecting full strength against Newcastle next week in the FA Cup quarterfinal and last game before international break.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's weird because, you know, rotation can be attributed so many different ways. Like, you look at this lineup and it's sort of a full rotation, but then you also get these sort of half rotations here and there where two or three of the first choice players swap out and then you just slightly change it up. And so I think Pep and the staff are always really good at sort of balancing that and never sort of overloading one player besides Rodri, maybe. But
I was going to say, apart from the obvious
aside from
exception.
Rodri, you don't really ever see someone who is getting sort of too many games in a row where they finally need a rest. You don't really have any issues that come of that when they do need a rest and you sort of see them missing. They always sort of find a way to balance that out. And so, yeah, we'll see rotation here and there. But yeah, I agree with you. No full rotation from here on out.
Yeah, which is equal parts scary, but equal parts exciting, because should things go to plan, I reckon, Joe, that's probably the segue into the running, basically, barring an absolute sort of crash and burn in the Premier League title. I was saying it to my dad on the way back home. This is probably it now, isn't it? This is going to be a little bit like it was this time last year, where every game, I know the players and the manager have spoken about it in a similar sense, but in terms of now we can officially say as the sort of supporters, every game's going to be a final.
Yeah, this is like probably the most arrogant comparison I'll ever make, but growing up a New England Patriots fan, we would always joke like the season started when the AFC Championship game began, because it was pretty much a guarantee, right? Like, at this point, you know, we are beyond spoiled with the squad that City have, the manager that they have. And it really feels like, clearly, you know, every game matters. But, you know, you start to get to end of February, beginning of March, and it's like, okay, you know, now we really got to kick it into gear. And, you know, the games are going to come thick and fast, multiple competitions, high stakes. And to me, this is the most exciting and nerve-wracking time to be a City supporter in this era. It's you know, it's why we get off the couch and go to the match, or why we get on the couch to watch the match if you're at home. And I think there's a lot of, you know, really enticing fixtures coming up. I mean, my heart rate's going up thinking about it, but again, it's what we look forward to as fans. And I think tonight was kind of it was kind of eye-opening for me. I don't know how you guys feel, but like, for all that City have accomplished pre-Pep and during Pep's era, I think tonight was one of the moments where I realized, like, not that we've made it, because that sounds ridiculous, beating Copenhagen at home, but just like how, and I think Ollie Kirsch talked about this a little bit on yesterday's episode, but just how obvious tonight seemed. Like, it was, at no point was I any sort of worried, not when the lineup dropped, not when, you know, Copenhagen scored. It's just, yeah, City are going to get through this. They'll probably get through the next round. And you know, the expectations kind of like, if they don't make it through the semifinal, that's a huge disappointment. You look back 3-4 years, we wouldn't have been saying that. And obviously, domestic success, we've come a long way. But I think, you know, something needs to be said for how far the club has come collectively in Europe, and, you know, something that shouldn't be taken for granted.
No, I think that's a fair point. Some matches are more equal than others, and that's probably the case with this one. But on the grander scheme of things, six consecutive seasons now City have made the quarterfinals. I think that goes back to 2017-18, Pep Guardiola's second season, because obviously Monaco was the first season. So, look, City haven't always had it their way in the Champions League. There was, I think if you look at some of those quarterfinals, it's, what is it, only three progressions past that stage? So equal split, three quarterfinals, three semi... obviously two finals as well. God, maths, it's late on. But Alex, the grander point is that, and Joe obviously emphasises it there, City are making these knockout matches in Europe mandatory. I believe that's 10 wins in a row in the Champions League. That stretches back to the semi-final against Real Madrid, the third English team ever to do that. You know, records after records after records. We've kind of become used to it, but it's still... nice to step back and go, Jesus Christ, these guys are good. I think that was possibly worse that affect the words the Copenhagen manager used in his post-match press conference as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think when you get, I mean, we'll see the draw in, what, a week from Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there always does seem to, and I use this phrase pretty frequently on Twitter, but this City team last season and this season feels inevitable. And that's really the only word that I can use to describe it. And I think it just goes to emphasize what Joe just said, that no matter who you face, and there are probably one or two opponents that I would rather not draw for the quarterfinal, but aside from them, you pretty much would, like, it's not even that you would bet on City, because I think we would all bet on City always, but you just expect them to win, and you just believe that they're going to find a way. And I think there was a turning point, not even last season, but the season before that, where we reached a point where the squad just had a certain mentality, and you could tell. And I think the Gundogan goal against Villa probably sort of capped that off and really cemented that into our thinking. Mm-hmm. But before that, there would be these sort of tough moments, and some way or another, we always seem to sort of bow out of them in some form, or just find it really difficult and almost make it more difficult than it should. And that we turned a corner, and now we're just into a sort of new era. It feels like that. I completely agree with the point that was just made, that, you know, we really just do feel like there's not much stopping us besides ourselves from reaching the final again.
It's funny, you sort of reflected a conversation Adam and I had way before this was a daily podcast, when we were pretty much the only two people listening to it. So no worries for not picking back up on that, because I don't think many people would have. But we sort of said similarly, that Villa goal almost instilled a mentality, because, I mean, obviously you can go back and you can look at the Gillingham playoff final, and you can look at 93-20 in 2012, but they're probably one-offs in the grand scheme of things. But at the start of last season, there was a spell, I think City had two or three games out of a six or seven run where they'd go behind, and sometimes two goals behind. I think Newcastle away was one of them. And you just thought, oh God, here we go. City have gone behind again, and they're going to win. And that's kind of been the case. Alex Ferguson's teams had that sort of that aura about them, and I guess that's probably part of it. Guardiola as well, he's pretty good at his job. We will sort of touch on a few aspects of that game. I do want to speak a little bit about Liverpool in the second half of this show, but Joe, standouts for you? We'll obviously caveat it by saying, job was half done from the first leg. City sort of, they didn't have to turn up and it would have been a win, but, you know, they still had to score a couple of goals and score some goals they did. But, you know, you get my point, probably playing at 50, 60%, a little bit within themselves, going through the motions. But standout players for you, who do you rate that was sort of man of the match contenders, if you can?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I always try to give flowers to the people that aren't, you know, your frequently covered 10 out of 10 players, your Kevs, your Fodens, Hollands, Rodri's. I mean, Rodri, again, is the most consistent player I've probably since David Silva that we've had at the club, where... Again,
I was going to say, this is weird, I was going to say James Milner, but it shows what different wavelengths we're on there. Maybe not the level, but in terms of the consistency.
Fair. No, that's fair. That's fair. But in terms of, you know, the elite level play and putting in a minimum 7 out of 10 shift, it feels like we haven't had a player that consistent. But I think, you know, the player I want to highlight tonight is, or from, you know, the game is Akanji. You know, they talked about it a little bit on the broadcast and a little bit in the pre-match. Just, you know, again, he was kind of like, not necessarily an afterthought, but again, he was a deadline day signing and he started a Champions League final. He's
Laporte's injury, wasn't it? I mean, we're doing a lot of 2022-23 flashbacks here, but Laporte almost killed himself getting City across the line in 21-22. He then sort of has the entire summer out injured. It is a bit worse than expected to go out and add another centre back and look at him now. Look at Laporte now as well.
Right, and it's funny how things can change, right? That could have been a David De Gea fax situation where the transfer never goes through, but he's one of these players who, when City signed him, obviously at first I'm thinking, well, that's kind of out of left field. That's not really City's MO, and then you kind of think about it like, okay, you know, he is a tremendous player. He was kind of falling out of favor at Dortmund, but you could see the potential, but I don't think anyone could imagine he's been as good and as consistent as he has over the last 18 months. I mean, you know, left back, right back, both the center backs. I think he's come so far in stepping into midfield. I mean, in such a short period of time. And I think, you know, it was pretty obvious that John Stones was going to figure out that role when it was asked him, just because of the type of player he is. Same with Rico Lewis. I personally didn't think, with Akanji, it's just a clunky. I didn't think he really had it in him. But he's impressed me so much, and I think tonight he was probably my man of the match. I mean, obviously the goal is a striker's finish, but you know, when you look at kind of even stats like just touches, right, 119 touches, 95% pass accuracy. Yes, he wasn't asked to do a lot defensively, but he just seems to be getting so much more involved and confident when he's on the ball. And you know, I think City are in a really good position where, yes, they're letting up more goals than they were this time last year, but I think all the defenders are making positive strides. Even Kyle Walker, who had been kind of falling out of form in favor earlier this year, you know, he seems to be coming back. So it seems like the competition, right, everyone's pushing each other to a new level. And I just think Akanji has been one of those players who's really stepped up and thrived.
Alex, do you think Manuel Akanji, pound for pound, because you could probably make the case for Erling Haaland, but as we know, his wages are £1 billion a week, but do you think pound for pound he's been the best signing since the start of last season across Europe, across the Premier League? I'd probably make the case that he is the best pound for pound signing in the Manchester City squad, because what was it, less than £20 million, as Joe says, on deadline day. And any club could have got him. Well, maybe not Stockport County and Wrexham, etc. Well, Wrexham probably could have got him with the money they've got. But basically what I'm getting at, you know, his contract situation was stalling at Borussia Dortmund. He, I think it's right in saying he'd refused to sign it. It looked like he was going to go on a free at the end of what would have been last season. City waltz in a couple of days before the deadline, get the job done. And look, I think you can make a case every team in Europe could do with a player like Manuel Akanji.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I completely agree on the sense that he is City's best value signing, and then there's probably someone out there who I'm forgetting to, you know, really say that he's the best value signing in the Premier League of the past one or two seasons, but he's certainly up there. And I think alongside that, you also have to say, I mean, this sort of goes hand in hand with value, but like Manu Akanji, it is probably the most intelligent signing, maybe alongside Julian Alvarez, that City have made recently. True. Because as you said, any club would want to have a player like that. And just like Joe said, he can go anywhere across that back four. And there were Borussia Dortmund fans who were thanking City for taking him off their hands, because he was in such a bad run of form. I think he had a few injuries the season before that, and he just seemed like an unreliable player. And that's where a lot of the question marks arose. But somehow Pep and the board and the staff, they all have this vision, and they're able to just see things that other people don't see. And within a few months, you sort of buy into the vision yourself and you understand why they have the jobs that they do. And we are sitting here talking on a podcast like this. And you look back in hindsight and it is just astounding that a club like City, who all other clubs have to have on their radar in terms of transfers, were able to pull off something like that. Because yes, City do have the funds to go and do these things. Of course, this signing in particular doesn't really fall into that category. But alongside that comes the attention of other clubs sort of wanting to poach your transfers, because you have the track record of signing players at such a high success rate. And so that's something that I think goes unspoken a lot. And maybe signing him that late into the window and the interest not really being there played a part in it. But I think if other clubs were switched on to the fact that City had interest in Akanji from that point, they probably would have, you know, maybe gone there or at least considered it a bit more. And in hindsight, these clubs have to be looking back and thinking, how can we make moves like that in the future?
I think the environment matters as well. You look at down the road at Manchester United, and there's a litany of players you could reel off who are talented, but under the circumstance they've been playing at, have struggled. Look, City were linked with Harry Maguire, and I reckon he'd have been maybe not as coveted as they felt at the same time, but he'd have been a much better player under Guardiola. Even going back, Johnny Evans, poor bloke, who is still, I think, chasing Erling Haaland's shadow about from that game on Sunday. Guys, that'll do for part one. Stay exactly where you are. We'll be back in part two to round off the Copenhagen game and look ahead to Sunday's clash against Liverpool.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast. I apologise for my juvenile behaviour before the break. I've just had it up to here with Liverpool fans telling me that, Joe, success for Manchester City doesn't mean anything. This means more, don't you know? I think back to Istanbul, and obviously everyone remembers where they were, but that full-time whistle hit, City win the treble. Did you bother to go back and check City's financial records to make sure that everything was in order before you even dared celebrate, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't have tears running down my face. I definitely wasn't running around the house screaming at the top of my lungs, and I definitely wasn't riding a high for like 2 weeks. It was miserable. Everything to do with supporting this club's pretty miserable, you know, adding that. So, you know, Liverpool fans, as always, Trent, you know, great points made over there at Merseyside. But no, it's so easy to obviously not like a club that, you know, the club you support has a rivalry, whether it's territorial or in the table based. But I don't know, across any of the sports that I watch, there's ever been a team that I've truly hated to the core, like Liverpool, from the top to the bottom. And the irony is they're owned by, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan here in the States, so like I can relate to how shit their owners are. So I've already hated the ownership. The fans are arrogant. They're entitled. They're just so misinformed, and it leaks into the players. I look through that squad. There's nobody that I like. I'm not even going to try to make an exception. They're just rotten top to bottom. And I hope that City go there Sunday and just beat the ever living piss out of them, because they drive me absolutely insane.
Okay, now time for your real opinion, Joe. no, it's remarkable, and just sort of those comments, Alex. We won't give it too much brain space because it is absolute drivel. But I did enjoy the part of it where Trent Alexander-Arnold said something along the lines of, "They've probably been more successful." meaning City have probably been more successful. It's just where has this guy, first of all, got the confidence? Second of all, got the logic to even come out and say with his chest that City have probably been more successful than Liverpool, when I think it's something like double the amount of trophies Guardiola has won at City during the same time.
Probably,
yes. Is Trent a conspiracy theorist? Is that what we're saying?
Man, I have no idea. I think, so I just want to pull up something you said there, because I do agree that I don't think most of this is worth talking about. But there's something to be said about the mentality that sort of leaks in from the fans and just sort of like orbits around certain clubs. And I think they're, I don't really want to sort of like misattribute this, but I think with a lot of the bigger clubs, and I don't include City in this because City's growth has been very recent. Like, we can't ignore it in terms of like a global scale when we look at social media and whatsoever. Like, City are still a smaller club than your Arsenals, your Liverpools, your Man Uniteds, just in the sense of the fan base and the scope of that. And so I think when you have these larger fan bases, Arsenal included, you get fans who are just sort of like misinformed in a way, to use the same word. And I think a lot of people will sort of, you'll see a viral tweet from a certain fan and then you attribute it to being part of that whole fan base. And then the fan base starts to buy into it. And it's just sort of this cycle that just sort of feeds back into itself. And it's really interesting to me how that then leads back into the players, because you would think that they get the guidance to not say these things and have the sort of coaching and skills. And we know Rodri's PR skills are terrible, but like at other clubs, you would still expect these players to, you know,
but that's part of their lore, isn't it? The whole thing with Liverpool, and look, we did a whole segment last week about United, Liverpool rivalries, etc. And I'll happily say it's forever more United, no matter where City are. Liverpool, yeah, the games have been awful, the fans have been insufferable at times. But it, you know, for me anyway, I appreciate other people are different. But just in general, Alex, that entire lore about Liverpool is, and to use the phrase, this means more, when it's just utter fabricated bollocks. And you have to say, in fairness, it does work. Look, City have barely won at Anfield in the last four decades. But that's just kind of what they do.
Yeah, but the other thing to that is, why would you say that the week before? And that quote was today, right? Or was that an old quote that got dug up?
It was it was over the weekend. I think the actual piece was from the Daily Mirror, possibly over the weekend. But it was in the build-up to this game.
Sorry, yeah, anyway. I didn't see like the actual source. I just saw it shared over social media.
Lucky you.
But like, why would you say that in the week leading up to a match like this, when all that's going to do to the City players is just give them even more reason to go and batter you on Sunday? And
when does that ever work?
It never works. It never works.
It's bulletin board material and it always backfires.
Yeah, it's like the Arteta tweet of like Ivan Toney and stuff that he just puts up on the screen.
Or the Arteta playing You'll Never Walk Alone in training. Or the Arteta sort of, I mean, how long can we go on? The guy has taken a few L's. Hopefully that continues this year. It's just nonsense. You say you can't find anything nice to say about the Liverpool squad. I just think Trent Alexander-Arnold's a sensational footballer. And if we speak about players who would probably go from one level to another, if not more, under Guardiola, I think he's certainly one of them. But it's just weird, I think is the best way to describe it. Joe, anyway, quickly before we bounce on the football, we will have a full in-depth preview for you on Friday's episode, so tomorrow. God, that week's gone quick. But in terms of what you expect, for me, and this is totally characteristic, but at the same time, it's also backed up by facts, I find optimism heading into a City game away at Anfield massively misplaced. So are you going to tell me I'm wrong? Are you much like me, battening down the hatches and hoping to get to, what, 5 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, having escaped Merseyside with somewhat of City's dignity and hopefully a couple of points in hand?
Yeah, I don't quite have the Andrew Detmer levels of optimism going into this one like I have with other matches recently. I mean, it's going to be cagey. It's going to be back and forth. I think it's going to be high tempo. You know, a lot of key players for Liverpool are returning. Mo Salah's been back in training. I think, you know, the only kind of reason I'd lean towards City potentially winning, which obviously isn't a frequent matter at Anfield, is dependent on what Liverpool roll out in the Europa League, because they do play on Thursdays now. So
if they're playing kids already, what team are they going to throw out? Because you'd imagine they're not going to risk any of the big hitters. Why would they? Why would they? Look, if it was the Champions League, wouldn't. Maybe, but...
Yeah.
But you'd imagine they could probably play. I don't even know if they've got... What's the fella called? Fenway owner?
John Henry?
John Henry, yeah. I reckon he's going to start up front.
Yeah, I mean, so again, if I could see what the lineup is now, I'd maybe change my mind. But I think it's probably going to be one of those par for the course where City are probably the better side. Probably gets kind of nervy. Liverpool are going to get a penalty.
Oh, no.
Probably going to end 1-1, 2-2. It just feels like something about this fixture can be spellbinding to watch, but it can also be just like very frustrating. And, you know, I mean, even the reverse fixture, right? That 80th minute goal from Trent Alexander-Arnold, City should have won that game. And we typically come away from this fixture saying that. I'd love to be proven wrong, but right now I'd probably go put my money on a draw.
And the question, I guess, is whether or not people would take it. Alex, this is obviously, I'm going to do my dumb journalist question here and ask a question that obviously I know isn't true, but because we know it's not true. But do you think Guardiola needs a win against Liverpool with fans, with Klopp in the dugout? We know he doesn't, but there's kind of a part of me that's like, okay, you've achieved everything else. This is kind of the last thing that's on the list, really, isn't it? And by God, what a way that'd be to set up the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think if I were Pep Guardiola and I were answering that question, he would say, absolutely not. Like, the season's not over. Like,
no.
I do think there is something to that, though. I think this is, you know, the final blow that you can deliver in a rivalry that has defined Pep's time at the club. And I don't think he will think too much of that, or at least let that impact his thinking if he is thinking about it. But I do think, and especially with Arsenal 3 weeks after, and on paper, probably the tougher match, maybe when you factor in home and away, maybe not, but the tougher opponent, especially given the injuries to Liverpool, I do think within the scope of the season, and then when you add in the scope of the rivalry at large, it is a match that you would, you know, cut a finger off to win pretty much and come away with 3 points, because alongside that being sort of the nail in the coffin for the Pep-Klopp rivalry, it also gives City a leg up in the title race to the point where it is ours to lose if we do win on Sunday. And I think the combination of those two just makes it more nervy than I've ever seen, you know, a City-Liverpool matchup.
So was Matias Nunes's finger a sacrificial, like, just a sacrifice for Sunday's game? Is that what you're getting at? Because, listen, hell of a teammate if that's the case.
In fact, as you say that, I'm scrolling on Twitter, I've just seen a photo of it again.
You can't hide from it.
It's rancid. That's what it is. Joe, 2-2 draw. You taking it right now?
You're asking me right now, so I haven't seen the lineups.
Just right now. You can fast forward to Monday. 2-2.
No,
goals.
I'm going to say, despite everything I just said, I'm going to say no. I wouldn't take that.
Interesting. Alex?
Hell no. We better win.
Oh.
We better win this game.
Do you think it is a must win then, Alex? Because I reckon a draw. Look, Liverpool haven't looked, well, they have looked like dropping points, but at the same time, they have kind of had this, to coin your phrase earlier on, inevitability about it. It looked like they're going to score in the 100th minute against Forest. That's kind of the sort of way they've been playing this season. But at the same time, you would probably bank on them maybe dropping a couple of points, and then you obviously say City have to be perfect. Is it more your concern City won't be perfect between now and, what, the middle of May? Or do you think Liverpool, if they get a point, can sort of go on and win it at a canter?
It's not even about the Premier League race. I think there can never really be a must win unless it's literally down to points, you know, like anything can happen. It's more a must win in the sense that, going back to what Joe was talking about earlier, that we are finally getting into the point in the season where everything really, really matters. And with this being as, and maybe you can put the derby as the first match of this run if you want to sort of like label it like that. But for me, you know, the derby, given the current circumstances at home, we should always win that. So for me, that's not, there was, that was never really up for contest. But this match on Sunday, if you lose that, then you could say that it gives City, you know, a bit more of like sort of like pressure on them, a bit more weight on their backs, maybe a bit more sort of like motivation. But for me, the more important thing is getting the momentum built. And this is the first sort of like push of the boulder to get the thing rolling to, you know, give it another good shot at a treble. And, you know, a treble, the odds of that are very, very low. But with each of the trophies, I don't think this is just about the Premier League. I think this has massive implications on the psychology of the squad, especially with the 2 week break after, and well, a 1 week break until the Newcastle match, and then a 2 week break after that to the Arsenal match. There's just a lot of time for this result to sit and stew with these players. And I think a win just does so much more than a draw or a loss.
I think I come in it, Joe, I'll give you the final word, but I come on in on it that it's more important for City not to lose than it is for them to win. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, probably. It's one of those, like, I don't want to agree with it, but yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. I mean, I think losing, especially, obviously, points aside, just being at the beginning of this difficult run of fixtures too is just such a... And I think that, you know, the players would probably be able to get past it, certainly more than the fans would. But I just think timing-wise, it would be really detrimental. And off the top of my head, I don't know who Arsenal have this weekend. But, you know, you're looking at a chance to
it's
then...
It's probably going
to
be like Kidderminster Harriers or something. I swear their fixture list recently has just been playing some absolute bums.
Yeah, so they'll put seven past Brentford and, you know, then they'll hop City in the table. So, yeah, I mean, losing is... It's not great.
And one final point I want to add in here, if I can. Just going back to a point to sort of weave everything together here. I agree in the sense that the players can probably put it out of their memory and move on to the Arsenal match, you know, sort of like unscathed almost, no matter the result. But going back to the point we made about, you know, fan opinion sort of leaking into the clubs, the atmosphere at the Etihad on, what is it, the 31st of March, I believe, is going to be a lot different depending on where we are on the table and what that result was. And that will have an impact on the players, surely.
And speaking of momentum boosts, it's kind of been, it's never this easy. It was dubbed like this in 2014. Liverpool beat City, they're going to win the league. Obviously, Mr. Gerrard happened and Demba Ba following it. But I do fear this might be the final hurdle for Liverpool to just sort of head down and go for it, especially because, look, if they throw away the Europa League, I don't think many people are going to lose sleep over that. They might be able to do a tin pot quadruple, but if they don't win that trophy and they win the Premier League and possibly the FA Cup, I don't think anyone's going to be bothered in Liverpool. But yeah, that's to come. Look at us catastrophizing already. That's what Anfield away does to us. Joe, thank you very much. It's been plenty of fun.
Cheers, Amos.
Alex, thank you very much. It's been plenty of fun.
Yep, thank you very much, as always.
Listeners, thank you very much. It's been plenty of fun. Like I said, tomorrow we'll be back with a more in-depth preview ahead of Sunday's fixture. Until then, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.